We're attacking neutrinos in a unique detector buried deep within the ice at the South Pole. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and we're checking in on what subatomic particles tell us about our universe. It's called the Ice Cube Neutrino Observatory. It's designed to spy on some of the strangest and coolest particles in the cosmos. So let's go right to the science with your questions wide open here. What questions do you have about neutrinos and other subatomic particles in our universe? What do you think are some of the most exciting discoveries in astrophysics? Bring it on, 800-642-1234. Cale Hansen is a professor of physics at the UW-Madison. He's also director of the Wisconsin Ice Cube Particle Astrophysics Center and director of operations for the Ice Cube Neutrino Observatory. Cale, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate.
So this observatory has the largest neutrino detector in the world. We need to start with, what are neutrinos? Can you give us the short story?
Yeah, real short story. So neutrinos are one of the particles that actually make up matter in the universe. There are 12 of these particles, and neutrinos are the lightest of these particles. They have some interesting properties, such as they're chargeless, and they are very, very weakly interacting with everything else. So that kind of makes them special.
Why does that make them special, that they don't, you know, cling on to other things and they don't really have much of a charge?
Well, it makes them actually incredibly useful for doing astronomy. I mean, astronomy has been done for, you know, centuries with just using light particles. And we're actually trying to open up a new field of astronomy that uses particles. We actually have opened up a new field of astronomy that uses particles other than light particles, other than astronomers kind of looking through your standard optical telescopes. And that's what the Ice Cube Neutrino Observatory is. It's a neutrino telescope.
Yeah, so neutrino detection is sometimes described as being like a telescope. How do you explain that? What are you trying to find there?
So what we're trying to find is where the neutrinos are coming from. We're actually trying to find where cosmic rays are coming from, but neutrinos are an important piece to this puzzle. When we look up at the sky with Ice Cube, or look down at the sky, actually Ice Cube is kind of interesting in that it's a telescope inside the ice. And it looks all around. It looks up at the sky above, and it looks at the sky below, going all the way through the Earth. And the reason that we call it a neutrino telescope is that we can actually look at these neutrino events. We get hundreds of thousands of these neutrino events. Most of them are from the atmosphere. But on the order of a couple dozen per month, they're actually from the cosmos. They're from the astrophysical sources. And we're trying to figure out, by pointing back to those sources, just like a telescope does, a conventional telescope does, we're trying to locate where these sources are in the sky and match them up with objects that we, you know, either we know about already, or maybe objects that we don't know about.
Can you give us a visual of what the Ice Cube Observatory looks like, at the South Pole? How big is it? Where is it?
So Ice Cube's name actually comes from the fact that it's a cubic kilometer of ice. So it's literally one kilometer by 1 kilometer by 1 kilometer of ice that's been instrumented with about 5,000 optical sensors. And what we do is we drill holes and put these optical sensors deep in the ice in these holes, about a mile deep. And we actually use the ice as what's called a Cherenkov radiator. When the neutrinos interact in the ice, they give off light particles, visual light particles. And this array of 5,000 sensors detects those light particles. And by looking at the patterns and the time, we can tell where the neutrino is, what kind of neutrino it was, how energetic it was, and where it came from on the sky.
Wow. And so neutrinos give scientists a lot of information then about other objects and how things move in our whole universe. They kind of give us clues.
So yeah, neutrinos, as I was saying before, they're extremely weakly interacting. So they're very penetrating particles. A neutrino, one of the stats I'd like to quote, is a neutrino can pass through a light year of lead without interacting. And so this makes them useful for doing astronomy, because we can actually use these neutrinos, unlike any other particles that we know out there, to image the sky at high energies. Everything else that we know of, light particles, other particles, cosmic ray particles, they're just not, they can't go back and point back to sources at high energies on the sky. So neutrinos kind of open up this new window that we've never been able to see before.
We're talking with Cale Hansen. He's Director of Operations for the Ice Cube Neutrino Observatory, which we're learning about. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your questions about neutrinos and other subatomic particles? What are your questions about particle physics? Do you remember when you first heard of neutrinos? What do you think? What do you want to know about astrophysics? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Cale, the Ice Cube Observatory in Antarctica, why is it there? Why do you do that research there?
Great question. It's the ice. I mean, it's all about the ice. So we need a place on the Earth. There are a couple of places on the Earth that you could construct such a neutrino observatory. One, there's actually a neutrino observatory, smaller, but has been operating for quite a long time, that's deep within a lake in Russia, Lake Baikal. Collaborators, or you know, the scientific community is also building a neutrino observatory, much like Ice Cube, in the Mediterranean Sea. But we decided to go down to the South Pole and use the ice because ice is actually turns out to be extremely transparent when you get down about a mile deep. And it also has the property that it's extremely stable. It's obviously quite an endeavor to drill these holes a mile deep. But once we actually make the holes and put the sensors in and they refreeze, it's an incredibly stable environment. So it's a very low-noise environment, and almost it's perfect for doing neutrino astronomy.
And even with climate change and the warming climate, ice melt, that still keeps it, you still have a stable environment there to do this research.
Well, I mean, Greenland is certainly experiencing unheard of ice melt right now. It's, I guess, fortunately for us at the South Pole, it's still pretty darn cold down there. So when we get down there, the South Pole station is open from about early November to middle of February, and it never gets above, I think the warmest recorded temperature there is about 7 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's still quite cold there, and there's still, you know, there's still no ice melt at the South Pole itself. Now, of course, Ice Cube is, it's really literally in the center of the Antarctic continent on top of a sheet of about 3,000 meters of ice. So there's quite a bit of ice there, and it's quite cold, yeah.
So when you go there, where do you stay?
There's a station. So the United States Antarctic Program is run by the National Science Foundation. That's our sponsor. That's who actually provided most of the funding to build Ice Cube. And they've been operating stations there since, I think, the late 50s. And in about 20 years ago, they constructed the most modern station. So when you go down, and, you know, most of us, you know, scientists will go down for a couple of weeks per year. And we stay in, it's basically a large above the ice dormer with, you know, staterooms and galleys. And there's even a gymnasium down there.
So last month, the Ice Cube Observatory got this $23 million grant from the National Science Foundation. How will that grant money be used on Ice Cube?
We're putting in what's called the Ice Cube upgrade, and it's the first in what we hope to be a series of extensions to the Ice Cube facility. This upgrade is actually not going to focus primarily on neutrino astrophysics, but actually using neutrinos from the atmosphere to study, it's kind of like a beam, that we can exploit to study the properties of the neutrinos themselves.
Let's take a call now. Let's go to Ray joining us from Whitefish Bay. Hi, Ray.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question. Since neutrinos so rarely interact with any matter, and so when you have an event occur, when it interacts, how do you know what that's going to come from? I mean, you only have one point. How do you tell where in the universe that originated?
That's a great question, Ray. So what happens is when the neutrinos interact in the ice, they turn into their charged particle doublets. So a neutrino, a muon neutrino, for example, will turn into a muon. And what happens is that muon then flies through the ice and actually deposits a long track. And sometimes these tracks can be kilometers long. The muons are also a fairly penetrating particles. And the muon, as it's exiting or as it's transiting the ice, it's radiating all of this Cherenkov radiation. And that radiation comes off and is detected by the array of sensors that we put down there. And by reconstructing, by looking at the pattern of the light, I mean, you can almost look at it just by eye or, you know, with the aid of a computer that, that reconstructs the event patterns that happen in the array, you can almost kind of see it looks like a line. And so by using sophisticated algorithms on, you know, computers that are constantly running at the South Pole, we can actually reconstruct what the directions of these muon tracks are to less than a degree and point back to less than a degree on the sky.
So kind of like a trail of breadcrumbs in a way.
Yeah, it's a breadcrumb trail. Right, exactly.
Ray, thanks for the call. So UW-Madison is the lead here on the IceCube Observatory. Who are your other research partners?
So we have a number of other research partners in the United States and also in Europe and in Japan and Korea, too. So it's a worldwide collaboration of over 300 physicists that that participate. But UW-Madison, it is the headquarters. the institute here, the Wisconsin IceCube Particle Astrophysics Center, is responsible for doing the daily maintenance and operations of the detector. So we make sure that data is constantly running, that the detector is live and taking data 99.99% of the time so that we don't miss any interesting transient events such as like a stellar collapse in our galaxy that we never know when it's going to happen. So we have to be ready to go at all times.
We're talking about neutrinos, these invisible, nearly massless subatomic particles, which rarely ever interact with normal matter due to their lack of electrical charge. Curious Things and the UW-Madison Research Outpost there. We're learning about it with an update from Cale Hansen. He's Director of Operations for the IceCube Neutrino Observatory. And you can join in with your physics and astrophysics curiosities, 800-642-1234. Do you think it's important for us to research things that have the potential to teach us about the universe, like neutrinos? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Back in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. And we're learning about a UW-Madison research outpost at the South Pole that will expand with the help of a $23 million grant. We're learning about the IceCube Neutrino Observatory here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And this research station is getting an upgrade to enhance its capabilities with the intention of providing new insights into the nature of our universe. Your questions about neutrinos and why they matter in astrophysics, join in 800-642-1234. What are your questions about neutrinos and other subatomic particles? Do you remember when you first heard of neutrinos? What did you think? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. And Cale Hansen stays with us. He's a physics professor at UW-Madison, director of the Wisconsin IceCube Particle Astrophysics Center, director of operations for the IceCube Neutrino Observatory. Let's go to the phones now with Jenny joining us from Madison. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
What's your question?
Thank you for joining me.
Yeah.
So my question is, how long does it take to set up the gear in Antarctica?
So you mean set up the gear in Antarctica? Because this is a big operation. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, Jenny. So that's a good question. We actually started building IceCube. Actually started putting the instrumentation in the ice in 2004. So you only get from early November to mid February every year to actually deploy the instrumentation. The rest of the year, the station is closed. And there are only a couple of people that stay there that are called winter over operators that kind of keep the place running. So it took us a while to actually get these 5,000 sensors into the ice. As you can imagine, it's quite an endeavor. So it took us actually 7 years of drilling, and so we started in 2004 and ended in 2010. And by the end of those by the end of that time, we were putting in about 20 of these strings of instrumentation in every year.
Jenny, what fascinates you about physics or astrophysics?
Well, my dad is involved in physics. So, yeah, I'm pretty, like, it's cool for me. So, yeah.
Well, thanks so much for calling in, Jenny. Kale, you know, we touched on climate change earlier. Matthew from Evansville has a follow-up question, called in to ask how climate change could impact your research over time. Could it skew the results over time?
Yeah, so for us, actually, climate change is probably not going to affect the taking of the data, or it won't actually change the way that the Ice Cube Neutrino Observatory operates over its lifetime, which we anticipate to be on the order of 20, 25 years. However, I can say that climate change has impacted a little bit the operations down there. So as I said, the ice cube itself is at the South Pole, right in the center of the continent. But in order to get there, you have to take a plane from this coastal base that's called McMurdo Station, and there actually the airplanes come in from New Zealand and land on ice runways. And in the last couple of years, those ice runways have been pretty slushy and have impeded the operations. So it's a little bit harder now than it was 15 years ago when we started building Ice Cube to get equipment and people down to the South Pole.
You're also looking for black holes and exploding stars. Is that right?
Yeah, so that's what we're looking for, is anything that's energetic and goes bang in the universe. And so, you know, so black holes are what happens when massive stars, when they eat up all their fuel, use up all of their nuclear fuel, and die. They give off an explosion. And that explosion sends a shock wave of gas ionized gas hurtling throughout the interstellar medium, and we think that those gas shock waves actually act like cosmic brooms and sweep up any of the protons or other material that's just sitting out there in the interstellar medium, and can accelerate it just pretty much like an accelerator lab on the Earth does. And it can accelerate these particles to high energy. So we've been observing these particles called cosmic rays for a 100 years, and we're still not quite sure where they come from. We think they come from these cosmic these supernova explosions, but there are probably also other exotic phenomena, probably related to some supermassive black holes way out there in the distant universe. And that's really what we're going after with Ice Cube.
Let's bring in another call now. Peter in Somerset is with us. Hi, Peter.
Hello. I had a question about, you had mentioned that the neutrino was a doublet, and I was wondering if it's truly known that it is a doublet and how that affects neutrino oscillations. And also, as far as the detector, what is the range of energies that the neutrino can have that you can detect, like in electron volts?
Peter, yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Kale.
Great questions, Peter. Okay, so let's take the first one. So a doublet. What is a doublet and how do we know? So the neutrinos they're paired, like I said, with these charged particles. And so there are three flavors of neutrinos and three flavors of their charged partners. So probably many listeners have heard of an electron. That's that's the little tiny subatomic particle that orbits nuclei, makes atoms. These electrons are paired with electron neutrinos. There are also, though, heavier versions that you don't see quite so often when you look around you, but they're actually raining we're in a constant rain of these particles that are called muons, and they're heavier versions of electrons, and because they're heavier, they also decay. They only live about 2 microseconds. But they're all around us. You just can't see them. And then finally, there's a very elusive one, very, very heavy and very, very short-lived, called the tau neutrino. And our tau particle, and also has a tau neutrino that's associated with that. The reason that we know that they're doublets is that we've observed them in accelerator laboratories, on the Earth, and we can actually tell when a neutrino interacts that it changes into its doublet particle. That's kind of nice because that helps us, even though we can't see the neutrinos are invisible, we know that if we see its doublet particle, that doublet particle had to come from a neutrino of that flavor. So that helps us kind of tell what the flavor, detect the neutrino, and also tells us what its flavor is. Now, to answer your other question about what's the range of energies of Ice Cube. So Ice Cube Again, in these units called electron volts, and I guess just to give you kind of a scale of what the energy means in kind of in everyday terms, if you talk about a million electron volts or a mega electron volts, that's kind of typical nuclear binding energies. So Ice Cube is sensitive to neutrinos from supernovae in our galaxy at in the range of about a million electron volts. But we actually also, and I guess most of our the range and most of the events that we detect on a daily basis are energies a million times or even a billion times more energetic. So that's our energy range is about a factor of a billion.
Wow. Kale, that's a lot to digest there. Peter, does that all make sense?
Yes, for the most part. So the doublet is it's a single charge, not like a positive-negative doublet?
It would be a charge and chargeless doublets, right? So there's one charged partner, and then there's one chargeless partner. And those chargeless partners, those neutral partners, are the neutrinos.
Peter, thanks for the call. Kale, as we start to wrap up here, how important is this money from the NSF to keep Ice Cube going?
Well, I mean, it's important in the sense that so we are supported by the NSF to do our operations, and we've been we will continue to be supported, and that will keep the Ice Cube detector itself running, and will keep the great science that we're doing going for years to come. But we've realized that as we've operated, I mean, this is the first time we ever really built anyone's really built a detector of this type. We realized things that we thought, we think we can do better if we had another chance. And so this upgrade money, this $23 million, is going to give us another chance to put more instrumentation, more advanced instrumentation, because 20 years has expired, into the ice, and it's going to help us understand better the properties of the ice that Ice Cube uses to detect the neutrinos. And that will actually help Ice Cube itself get a better vision on the universe.
Aha, 2.0. Kale, thanks for joining us.
All right, thanks a lot, Kate.
Kale Hansen is a professor of physics at UW-Madison and director of operations for the Ice Cube Neutrino Observatory. Just ahead, the Green Bay Packers are celebrating 100 seasons of football. And we'll go through the team's long history and why it's considered one of the greatest stories in sports. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.